Hi, thank you for joining us today on this ILTA podcast. This is Jamie Herman. I'm Manager of Information Security with Ropes & Gray, and I'm joined by Bill Kairos, who is Senior Manager of Information Security at Bingham McCutcheon. Does that sound right, Bill?
That's close enough, sure.
All right. Today we're going to talk about the Heartbleed, which we've heard so much about. What is it? How are our firms, or have we seen our firms impacted from this? Potentially how our clients have been impacted by this, some calls people might have been getting, our inquiries, and what are some takeaways, best practices, and things we should do. So with that said, let's talk about Heartbleed. What is Heartbleed? Heartbleed's not a virus or a piece of malware, just to kind of lay it out there. It was a vulnerability written into the OpenSSL protocol, and what it allows a potential attacker to do is capture 64K of memory via a command, which could potentially expose information that Bill get into shortly, that could put your organization at risk, your clients at risk, potentially data at risk, and this vulnerability could exist both on appliances as well as websites. And one of the things to point out before we move on to Bill's discussion on what kind of data could be revealed is there's a specific versions that are vulnerable to this. So if you're running 1.0 OpenSSL and earlier, I believe 0.98, 0.97, you're not vulnerable to this. And we can get into some of the action points down the road about how to deal with some older systems that may not be updating their version of OpenSSL or may not offer a patch if they are vulnerable. So we'll touch on that on the takeaways. But, Bill, why don't you go ahead and talk a little bit about kind of some of the knowns and unknowns and potential information that could be revealed by an attacker.
Well, as Jamie said, this is a vulnerability in the OpenSSL cryptographic software library, which is typically used on Linux variants, and it's actually not installed by default on Microsoft operating systems. However, you can't necessarily ignore Microsoft, and we'll talk about that in a moment. This clearly affects at least 500,000 websites around the world. That's why this is starting to make news, even in major media like NPR and CNN have covered this issue. What we do know is that the vulnerability can be exploited to read memory from the server that has the vulnerability in 64K chunks. And this has been used to get usernames, passwords, and even get the private encryption keys. And that's the critical one. And that's been proven. What it means is if somebody takes advantage of this vulnerability, they could potentially then decrypt communications, previous communications that have been captured or going forward, if the owner of the server doesn't take action. It really truly is a keys to the kingdom vulnerability. It's about as serious as you can possibly get, because it undermines what we take for granted when you see that padlock icon when you connect to a secure website.
Bill brings up a great point with private key being the keys to the kingdom. You know, one of the concerns certainly that's come up is typically with vulnerabilities and other types of attacks, there's some kind of footprint left behind, and there's some kind of identification or trail from a forensic standpoint or just from a visibility standpoint. If you see specific types of logs or if you have a managed service or you have an IDS in place. So one of the challenges with this is obviously it's not, you can't verify it. You know, people can't identify if they've been exploited through this OpenSSL vulnerability. And on top of that, if they were able to potentially capture the key, and just to quote, there isn't a choice, just for clarity purposes, if someone were to capture the 64K chunk of memory off that vulnerable server, it's almost, you know, potluck as to what you get. You could potentially get username and password. You could get some sensitive data, and you could also get that private key, and you can continue to reconnect to reissue that command to grab another 64K of memory. So where this poses a challenge is, being that you cannot footprint it and you can't identify it, is if you in the past have been had data exfiltrated or you had someone sniffing traffic, encrypted traffic potentially, this key, as Bill alluded to, can now be applied retroactively to that data that was taken and essentially unlock it and allow them access to it. So it's to add some context, I think, as Bill continues, it's important to note that this certainly isn't something that if you're not vulnerable you could disregard, because it certainly could have been something that was vulnerable in the past that has been patched. So I think an all-encompassing kind of reach needs to be taken when looking at the environment like this.
So the first thing you really want to do is look around your environment and see what's vulnerable and take appropriate action. A very common, so Heartbleed was first publicly disclosed last Monday, April 7th. 2 days later, the makers of Accelion Secure File Transfer released a patch for their system. So that's a hardened appliance designed for high security, and it contained this vulnerability. I mean, this was not, because this was common to so many different systems, and in a way, being up to date actually hurt you. If you had a OpenSSL library that was from the last 2 years, then you had this Heartbeat vulnerability, or the Heartbleed vulnerability, because it's because of the Heartbeat functionality that was introduced 2 years ago. Not all sites, not all vendors have been very good with communication on this, so you should test on your own and reach out to vendors directly. They're not necessarily putting things up on their website. I mean for my personal example, my own bank, I won't name them, but my banking institution did not have anything on their website. But when I called them, and as soon as they said the word Heartbleed, they had a canned answer that said they clearly understood what the question was, and they clearly explained, no, we were never vulnerable because we're not leveraging OpenSSL, et cetera. So you do have to reach out to vendors. Start with anything you have that's internet-facing. Do you have a extranet service? Do you have a secure file transfer server or service? Find out not only if they're vulnerable now, but were they ever vulnerable? Because an important step, as we'll talk about, an important step you need to take is to change passwords, because if they were vulnerable at one point, your passwords could have been intercepted. Yahoo is a good example of this. As a Yahoo Mail user, we had about 2 or 3 days of frustration where everyone in the security business knew Yahoo was vulnerable. That a lot of vulnerability scanning tools were saying that Yahoo Mail and other Yahoo services did have the Heartbleed vulnerability on April 7th and April 8th. It wasn't until the 9th that they came out and said, okay, we fixed it, we've applied the updates. What they didn't do, and what they should have done, is force people to change their passwords, and they also should have changed their client certificates, their SSL certificates. And it's, even to this date, it's not clear.
Yeah, so just to add to what Bill was saying, I think, something, he brought up a great point in that you want to look at your external facing sites first and foremost, because that's going to be the devices or the services that are scanned. People are going to hit them with a vulnerability scanner. They're going to look for this exploit. If there's certain response commands that's issued via either SSH or via a URL that tells them what system that is, or if you have it branded, Accelion was a great example Bill mentioned. It usually has the Accelion link or logo on the front page of it, even if it's branded with your law firm. So people can jump to the website, identify that platform is vulnerable, and then look at all law firms across the board to see who hasn't patched Accelion yet, or other companies, to be fair, outside of legal. So I think, that's a great point. And the other piece of this is, this is a great opportunity from a maturing, to kind of digress for a second, maturing security perspective. It's a great opportunity to really move forward and take that next step around vulnerability management within your organizations and take advantage of vulnerability like this that you would have benefited from other pieces of a mature security program being in place already, such as a vulnerability management program, because it puts you in a position now that you're reacting a little bit more frantically than you might have been had you had these tools in place and able to run a more formulated report either for, executives or for the IT folks to pass around and distribute. So you're kind of in a point where you're playing catch up and running around and trying to grab information from different sources, and it becomes somewhat uncoordinated at a time of need in this type of incident. So I think it's really important to take advantage and leverage this, similar to how companies that potentially could have an exposed website are going to leverage this to likely improve their security and disclose, change your password and things like that to their clients and customers. I think, we should also be proactive as an industry and kind of move that vulnerability management and the maturity of our security programs forward, with this as a great platform for it.
Wholeheartedly agree, and not to plug, but, looking forward to the Legal Sec Summit in June. We will have a session on vulnerability management. I believe there may be other webinars on this topic as well. I mean, these are tools that should be scanning your network on a regular basis and get updated with different scripts so that when a new vulnerability like this comes out, you can be on top of what on your network needs attention. So go ahead. I'm sorry, Jamie.
No, I was going to say, just to kind of dovetail, I know there is an ILTA vendor blog, which we have some of our vendors that are very prevalent in the legal field posting information about their systems being patched or vulnerabilities, and just some answering some questions. So visit the ILTA website. If you're a member, log in. If you're not, you can create an account and log in and view those resources and get some really valuable information, especially specific with products currently used in the legal industry by a lot of our member firms.
So to talk a little bit more about what we know out there is vulnerable and what isn't, again, focus on the internet facing first, but then you also want to draw your attention to the internal network and even endpoints. And out of the box, Windows 7 or Mac machine is generally not going to have any issues using the mainstream browsers, that with those operating systems. However, this is sort of late breaking in the last couple of hours. It's come to my understanding that there are some remote control products like PC Anywhere, not necessarily PC Anywhere itself, but products like that may contain this vulnerability. I've also read that the SonicWall's VPN solution contains this the Heartbleed vulnerability as well. I don't have all the details on how that could be exploited, but anything with encrypted communication, you want to touch base with the vendor to see if you need an update for the solution or not. I've also seen some video conferencing equipment that does have this vulnerability. It might be internal, might not be as critical, but again, it has encrypted communication for a reason, so that an inside attacker can't intercept credentials or other sensitive information. So you do want to reach out with those vendors as well.
Yeah, it's a great point, and I think as we move on from this vulnerability piece that we're probably beating into the ground here because we're very passionate about it, and it's valuable to any organization. I think. With mentioning that, this Heartbleed vulnerability, while it can't be traced or verified specifically if someone exploits the vulnerability, it could certainly be a portal for additional vulnerabilities and kind of create that chain reaction. And as Bill spoke about the internal devices and systems, that's where those really become vulnerable is what you may think is outside the organization and you don't need to kind of give the care and feeding and the housekeeping to the internal systems. It's certainly not a complete way to look at it. And I think the right way to approach this is methodically step through your entire environment from your egress point all the way back down to your endpoint. So it's a great point, though.
One other point I wanted to make, too, is even though native Microsoft does not have this vulnerability, if you are front-ending a server with a proxy server or some other device that handles the SSL communication on behalf of a Microsoft server, that device might have the vulnerability. So, be sure to look from point A to point B to make sure that you don't have exposure that you might not otherwise have. So again, in terms of remediation, so we did talk about on web services that have this vulnerability, what is critical is not just patching, but what you do after the patching. You need to revoke the certificate that you already have on the server and install a new one. And that's because, again, if the private keys were compromised, then someone could eavesdrop on communication going forward if you don't change the cert and revoke the existing cert. And then you want to request a change or force anybody on that system to change their passwords. It's just because I have further insight on this, if you have an Excellion secure file transfer server, you want to send a re-invitation. Log in as a super user and force a re-invite to all existing external users, and then you can use Active Directory or other means to force people to change their password for all of your internal users of the system.
No, it's a great point. I think that the certificate is a big one. I think you definitely want to go through those steps, as Bill mentioned them, and get that certificate revoked and reissued, not just revoke and reissue without expiring that certificate. You want to reissue that certificate with a new key and then go through that process of having passwords changed. And obviously, you want to be as descriptive as you need to be, but you also, caution purposes. But certainly, from a language perspective, if anything is being communicated outside the organization, whatever the hierarchy is in your organization, if it's your director of IT, your CIO, CISO if you have it, your general counsel, a partner, whoever that may be, you'd want to just vet that language or maybe check with them to say, is there any other language we need to put in here, because we're doing this in response to Heartbleed to just make sure that, we're secure and we're taking all appropriate actions proactively. So I think, certainly following those steps is the right way to take it.
Oh, agreed. No, Jamie and I have certainly heard from, you know, people calling in saying, you know, what's your status in terms of remediation for Heartbleed. So you may hear from some clients if you haven't already. About the certificate revocation, an important way to protect yourself from the desktop perspective is to make sure your browser is actually checking for revoked certificates. A lot of browsers do not do this by default. So by group policy for IE or other policies with Chrome, from what I understand, Firefox does do this by default. You want to make sure your browser is checking for a revoked certificate, and that can help warn you if you're using an invalid cert.
Yep, and there is on that note, there's a plugin called Chromebleed, which you can, if you're using Chrome, which could actually show you whether a site you're communicating with is still vulnerable. So another little tip, trick that you could use. In moving on from there, kind of a good segue, I guess, Bill, you want to talk about some of the resources that certainly you and I and some of our peers have been batting around as far as places to look for information, to check websites, some great information security blogs that we've been reading, and just
Sure. Something
if people want to stay connected. You know, they don't feel tied to waiting for the next update to come out from Symantec or McAfee or one of these companies. They could kind of look to some of the insiders and some of the websites that offer some really great tools that we could augment some of the internal resources we have available.
Sure, some things I'd recommend. If you have a website and you want to know right now, is this website vulnerable to the Heartbleed attack? My favorite is Qualys's. Just if you Google Qualys, Q-U-A-L-Y-S, and then as a separate word, SSL test. They have this existing site where it does a variety of tests to see if a site has SSL configured correctly. And they recently added Heartbleed functionality. That's worked really well. Another one is filipo.io. That it was starting to buckle under its popularity last week, but that's another one. If you want to see in terms of a good general list of websites and like social networking sites and other general purpose sites, and you wanted to get kind of a one stop shop for status, Mashable.com is actually maintaining a very good list on that front. If you're more interested in technical websites and vendor statements on where they stand with Heartbleed, the Internet Storm Center, which is, of course, always the kind of the paper of record for major security issues, is isc.sans.edu, isc.sans.edu or .org, and look for the diary entry on Heartbleed vendor statements. It's constantly being updated, and you'll see a lot of people adding additional feedback in the comments section. So whether it's Citrix, Symantec, Checkpoint, Cisco, you name it, all the major players have chimed in terms of where they stand. Not everyone has a complete statement at this point. Some vendors are still putting out statements saying we're still researching, we're still looking at our product line, but there is a lot of good info out there already in terms of what does and does not have the Heartbleed vulnerability.
Yeah, and obviously another great resource which we've seen some of our peers take advantage of is, you know, the email out to the groups on the ILTA website. You could, you know, get responses from people across different size firms in different areas, whether they're from the engineering side of the business or the security side or the technical side or enterprise systems. So you could get a lot of feedback and a lot of interaction. And sometimes, if you don't have the resources to do so, people may have done some of that legwork and reached out. So between the vendor blog on the ILTA site and you know, and sending out emails, the e-groups, I think it's a huge value add for people, you know, both any size firm. I know I'm sure Bill and I both have seen these and, you know, didn't not read any of them in the last added, even if it's something we didn't have to react to that we were planning on calling or researching. So I think certainly take advantage of all the ILTA resources available to you, as well as your peers in legal that you have communication contact with via email or phone call. You know, I speak for Bill. I'm sure, you know, we're generally available for people to reach out. I know people have done it in the past for questions, so feel free to leverage some of your peers across the law firms out there.
Absolutely. Let's continue the conversation on the LegalSec listserv. You know, let's put the questions out there. One other area we didn't really cover was mobile devices. The good news is that iOS devices are generally safe. BlackBerry Pre-10 devices seem to be generally safe. However, there is an issue with the BlackBerry 10 software. Android devices, it depends on your version. Apparently, some flavors of Android do have this vulnerability, and you know, with the, you need to check with your vendor and your specific flavor of the Android operating system.
Yeah, that's great. I think with that, we'll let everybody get back to their Heartbleed testing and patching. And like I said, Ulta Blogs, LegalSec, Listserv, e-groups, you know, feel free to reach out to your peers. And hopefully this has been helpful, and this added some information to kind of color in the Heartbleed discussion that everyone's been dealing with this week. And Bill and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, everybody.